I welcome you to Swadeshi School, a masterclass of progressive education presented to by SmartAI, powered by iGen Plus, FlipLearn, and Lead Squared. This masterclass series will take you on a short journey of introducing you to India's top unconventional minds joining us from different parts of India. In this masterclass, innovative topics, informative content, and progressive initiatives are being shared with you. We remain hopeful that the sessions over 7 days will inspire you to take you to your school community to a new direction of development. My name is Dr. Meera Subramanian. I'm your moderator for the day, and I have over 40 years of teaching experience in the school as a higher secondary teacher plus a principal, and I have a PhD in education, and right now I work with as a resource person for the Mahatma Gandhi National Center for Rural Education, Ministry of Education, Government of India, and also I'm a resource person and a trainer, freelance trainer, CBSE trainer. With this, we start our today's session welcoming Dr. Manjula Sharif. Manjula ma'am, welcome to the series.
Thank you, ma'am.
Dr. Manjula Pooja Sharif is MD and CEO of Calorex Group. She has been instrumental in founding and managing several premier schools. Calorex, since its inception in 1995, is a name synonymous to professionalism and excellence in schooling. It has under its umbrella the Delhi Public School, Calorex Olive International School at Ahmedabad, and Calorex is recognized as a Calorex Public School across the Western Belt of India with 40 plus educational institutions. Calorex is recognized as a quality conscious group with a focus on innovation and use of technology in learning. Her concern for the marginalized and those with special learning needs is evident through the projects Visamo Kids and Prerna, a school for dyslexics. She is a recipient of several awards, among them the prestigious Secular India Award from the former President of India, Sri Shankar Dayal Sharma, and Woman of the Year by American Bibliographical Society in North Carolina. Her session topic is Future Hybrid Work Culture. Ma'am, I welcome you to the session and I hand over the mic to you. Please, you can go.
And thank you. And
before I, 1 minute, ma'am. Before I start, I welcome the today's speaker and they know all our audience to immerse yourselves in the session and hold your questions, which will be addressed right after all the sessions are over. Thank you, ma'am. Start. You can start now.
Thank you, Dr. Meera. Thank you for having me here. Welcome to the participants. And it's exciting to be part of the masterclass. When I got an invite for speaking here, I thought it would be most relevant to talk on what has happened with the sea change that has happened in the education sector post-COVID, because the education sector and technology have been married for a very, very long time. But it is this COVID times that sort of catapulted the teachers, educators' readiness for technology and the acceptance from the parents' community. In my opinion, the technology integration with education, or as we call it, the hybrid working culture, is really here to stay. As we can see, what seemed like a few months has become almost 2 years, and we have absolutely no visibility as to how and when schools will open full-fledged. Even today, there is talk about senior schools opening only in a hybrid fashion. So whether you start 9th to 12th, or you call you know, like the odd even planning, transport planning of Delhi, New Delhi. You call 50% students on a certain day and 50% students on another day. So these are challenges that the education sector has to take head on. We have no choice of them in the matter any further. So I decided to choose a topic which was hot and burning and is here to stay. It's something that we all educators have to think through. It's something that all of us have to get comfortable with. It's something that all of us have to help mature the model of hybrid work culture, because like I said, it's going to be a long, long time before we settle in and have full-fledged face-to-face learning or brick and mortar learning. Let me put together, I put together a couple of slides which I'm going to share with you in a minute. Workspaces are going to, and when I say workspaces, I'm keeping it a little generic. As I've also already said, it is the, like I already said, overnight, we as educators were asked to, were given no choice but to ramp up. As educators, we have burnt midnight oil to be able to teach children online through the COVID times. First, let me start with the benefits. When we started to work from home, you know, the term is WFH, so widely used now. WFH has become a synonym for work from home. When we started that, the advantages were very, very clear. The flexibility of it offered. You know, most educators being women, they were home, and they were able to be part of their home, take care of the elders, stay safe, take care of the children, and yet work. So increased family time was the next benefit. Now, many men may not think it was a benefit. In the first couple of months, there was a lot of excitement. And then we know that the country had lots of issues. There was lots of domestic violence because of increased family time. And I sometimes jokingly said that the reasons that most things got normal soon after, but the first things that got normal is the liquor shops, is because men needed to diversify their attention from beating women. It's unfortunate, but it was true. And that's why the liquor shops of the world were opened right after the first lockdown. Other savings, you know, other benefits very, very clearly were real estate costs. My friends in Delhi and Gurgaon tell me that people from Gurgaon have been commuting to Delhi like 1.5 hours each way. They save 3 precious hours each day, which become productive. Not to mention the offices in Connaught Place or the offices in Barakhamba Road that are very, very expensive. Or, you know, take the examples of a Bangalore or a Pune, the MG roads, the real estates are so expensive that work from home provided that opportunity to save rents. I've already mentioned less commute, less public transport, better lifestyles. Overhead costs were saved because, you know, there was less air conditioning burning, there's less petrol being used. That 3 hours or 4 hours of travel time being commuted caused better lifestyles and less burnout. And the millennial preference, you know, the reason we spend so much time talking about the millennial is because the largest segment of the population of the world today is millennials. Millennials are typically the population that's born during the late part of the 80s and all of the 90s. So this is a large segment of the world. And if you study the millennial preference, you'll see they are into consultancy. They are into, you know, they are not jo roti kapda makan, which was the hope and the aim that we grew up thinking about. Our generation is definitely not the preference of the millennials. If those were the benefits of work from home or hybrid cultures or distributed workspaces, what were the challenges? We all know that we've had to really maintain the emotional boost of our teachers, of our faculty members, because you know, I've known that our faculty members used to have Antakshari online. I know that they used to have Saturday coffee sessions online. I know that they would be having hobby classes like cookery classes online. I've known of singing classes online, dancing classes online. So, you know what we did through the lockdown? We tried to create these social groups online because people were so tired of being alone, so lonely. So boosting, you know, morale of the employee became a big challenge for any institution. They needed the sense of support, you know, because they, you know, in a school, they would know what the grade 3B teacher is doing and if everybody's going in sync. Now, everything was being done online and supervision had become almost micromanagement. So there were a lot of those kind of, you know, emotional, psychological kind of challenges. Then, because we were thrown into the sea, there was lack of monitoring. You know, I mean, your teacher notebook or your daily logbook was very difficult to reproduce. And a lot of teachers are not familiar with Excel spreadsheets and how to use them. You know, the IT industry uses something like called Clockify, which is how you monitor working hours. Now, that's not something that education was ready for. Similarly, the vision of the organization was missing. I mean, people needed to reconnect with the philosophy, reconnect with the vision. All of this became a question mark. And of course, self-discipline. I mean, it is so difficult for people to get up in the morning and work out or go to the gym or do yoga. Now, you have to be self-motivated to sit down at home while the pressure cooker is, you know, blowing its whistle and teaching. I mean, there have been so many memes and so many jokes about managers counting the number of pressure cooker whistles and all of that. In spite of everything, I think work from home has been a huge success, especially in the education segment, which is why we kept up the morale of the home, the children and the parents. Otherwise, mental health would have been at serious risk had it not been for the teachers who've put in tremendous working hours during the COVID times. And of course, cybersecurity risks. We all know all the things that have happened. Children would steal the passwords and show objectionable material. Children would put all kinds of pictures that are not appropriate. And children will be children. So the lack of teachers being native digital, you know, citizens was an added pressure for organization and school heads such as us to maintain, you know, the cybersecurity issues, risks minimized. Now, how are we going to go forward with a hybrid work culture? You know, the first thing is a strong culture. We have to keep saying to our teachers that hybrid culture is here to stay. Don't wish it away. Please, please build capabilities to catch up because it is completely, completely the way forward. You know, leadership cannot be centralized to the principal or headmistress. Or, you know, vice principal. We have to decentralize leadership. It has to be in every class. The class representative CRs have to be empowered. The, you know, subject reps have to be empowered. The DCs, department heads, have to be empowered. I think leadership has to be really distributed. Of course, an unwavering focus on the student interest, on the parent interest. We cannot move away from that. Zero tolerance to compliances. I know, you know, the biggest challenge was to teach online. And soon I know that teachers were starting to make videos, teachers were starting to make assessments, and then we had to do examinations, ensure that there's no cheating online. It's been a real challenge to catch up, to match up to all kinds of standards online. So many of our policies have had to get revamped. You know, when we say work from home, so, you know, we are based out of Ahmedabad. We are in Gujarat. If somebody is in Nagpur, is that a, you know, long leave or are they working out of home? So, you know, suddenly leave policies also had to be revamped, re-looked at, you know, reoriented, readapted. What all did we do in Calyrics? This is a slide to show you, you know, we've always paid a lot of attention to digitization. We are a huge technically savvy company, organization. And when I say company, I'm using it loosely because we're a Section 8 company, which is a not-for-profit company. So since education was literally thrown in the high seas, one of the quick things we started to do is, you know, we took the leadership team with us and started to read a book, which is a very well, you know, marked and celebrated book in Harvard Business Review called John Carter's Leading Change. So every Saturday, our leaders from all over the schools would get together and do a chapter by chapter reading, book review. The second thing we did is across the slab, everybody, every teacher was asked to take a mandatory certificate online program. Example, you know, there are a lot of free courses available in Udemy, Coursera, name it, right? So we said, take a subject of your choice. It could be anything. It could be gardening. It could be how to take care of pets, anything. It could be subject related or it could be personal interest, but do it online. Because we wanted them to understand how to be an online student so they could be a better online teacher. The next thing, of course, was all teachers have gone through about 15 hours of mandatory online teaching, how to teach online, how to prepare online, how to engage students online, how to be digitally savvy, etc. During this 18 months of COVID, we also, you know, kind of did some research work and we launched an online teaching platform called eCal Academy. I've already mentioned this, culture is about reinstating communication, and we constantly kept saying to people that hybrid culture is here to stay, hybrid culture is here to stay, let us please readapt. And we built a strong learning curve. We said we have to learn, we have to catch up. So a leadership group, everywhere there was constant badgering on training. And this is a great quote, and that's why I have it here. I survived because the fire inside me burned more fiercely than the fire outside me. Before I go on to the next slide, I have just a few, two, three slides. I hope everything is working digitally. I hope you can hear me. Can I get a confirmation since I can't see you? It feels like I'm talking to my laptop.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for that confirmation. Right, so I talked a lot about culture. You know, I come from a management background. I've studied in the Indian Institute of Management. Of course, apart from being alumni of LSE and York University. Because of my management background, I think a lot in terms of management. And the number one thing that management teaches us is to build a strong culture. And so during the COVID times, I was asking myself, and that's how I put up that line there. How do you live in culture when you don't live in culture? It's like an oxymoron statement, but essentially I'm saying that physically we are not in a space, but yet we have to bind people. So how do we do that? So the idea was never lose touch of communication. And that's what we guided our teachers, never to lose touch. Of course, children, we were already teaching, but you know, we were having parent sessions online. We were continuously giving performance feedbacks, talking outcomes. Now, the same thing that we were telling the teachers to do, we were doing the same with teachers. So weekly results, weekly outputs, weekly teacher planners, everything was being monitored. The other thing, one of the other things to do, you know, when people, you know, like we say, out of sight, out of mind. When people are right, you know, we are used to doing face-to-face. So when we see people, they stay in a, you know, cognitive level. But when they are not in our horizon, sometimes we tend to forget them. And this is one of the things the key leaders have to keep in mind, that whether somebody is remotely placed, you're not even seeing them, please ensure that you're reaching every teacher, every last mile you're reaching. Avoid having haves and have-nots. You know, when we started to look at infrastructure availability, now some teachers had laptops, some teachers had desktops, most people did not. Some people had very strong Wi-Fi connections, some people did not. They had to manage with mobile data from their phones. So these were a lot of challenges that we had to kind of overcome and bring an equitability with everybody. We also run a program called Visamo Kids, which is essentially for the underprivileged children. And they live in a sort of a hostel and they go to good schools in Ahmedabad. Now, due to the COVID, we had to send them home. Now, once children went home, they did not have access to any internet facility. So we started to provide phones to their parents. Then they did not have connectivity, so we started providing connectivity. Now, you know, when we live in urban situations, we really forget what is the ground reality, you know, in rural India. Now, we gave them phones and we gave them connectivity. But believe me, when I heard stories about children having to walk 2-3 miles and stand on a hillock to connect to the, you know, whether it's Idea or a Vodafone, I was like, what are we talking about? I mean, how do we possibly reach and teach such students? So those kind of challenges were immense. And at that time, using just English because we are an English medium school was no longer relevant, because we are talking to students sitting in Dang, which is rural Gujarat. They don't even talk proper Gujarati. They talk their, you know, how every state has a regional language, which is very, very grassroots. They speak grassroots Gujarati, which even we don't understand. So then our teachers started to adapt to languages so that we could at least make ourselves communicable. Of course, the way we were able to do it is by strengthening cross-functional teams. You see, our IT teams were in every group because teachers were facing a lot of IT kind of challenges. Then we needed data entry people because teachers had to cope up and do presentations, prepare slides, prepare assignments, prepare short videos. So we had to create cross-functional teams. And then we started a lot of system-based and artificial intelligence so that, you know, small programs could run. We tried our best to avoid all kinds of conflicts, you see, because, you know, there were teachers who were spending 6, 7, 8 hours of teaching, and there were teachers who were spending only 1 hour of teaching, and everybody getting the similar salary. So there were just all kinds of things going on, right? And of course, because we are from the education field, we always have to build social capital, which took a huge beating during the COVID. So one of the messages that we kept giving teachers is to please keep building the social capital, please build the emotional quotient, not only with the students, but also with the parents, which was at such a brink. It was at such a crossroad. And as you know, and as I know, that so many reports have come up saying that the biggest challenge of the next year is going to be the emotional quotient of students, given what has happened in this year. You and me both know that many, many students have, you know, the kindergarten children, my heart goes out to them, the 3-year-olds and the 4-year-olds, they've suddenly grown up and become 6-year-olds without having seen peers, having seen a kindergarten school, having felt, you know, enjoyed classrooms, having sociability, psychology, having physiological changes happen together. The same goes out for 11th and 12th graders. All leadership happens there, peer learning happens there. And because you're a group of educators, I dare say that even gender understanding happens, you know, during a certain teenage. All of that is skipped. So you see, a lot of these are relevant things for educators. Our job is not just syllabus. Our job is shaping human beings. My last slide is one of my favorite slides, my quotes from my management days. It says, culture eats strategy for breakfast. Peter Drucker is a very famous management writer. What it essentially says is this, and I can give you the best example of COVID. You see, we have no medication for COVID. Everything that they're doing is to treat symptoms. So they're treating the fever, they're treating the body ache, they're treating all of that. There is no cure for the COVID, for the viral, right? That is culture. Culture is, you don't have any cure for culture. You can only cure through strategy, fix problems. Through strategy, create revenue. Through strategy, find a solution. But when you build a good, healthy culture, your strategy itself will be less. And I think in order for us to go through the challenges that the world is currently going through in what we call a VUCA world, as everybody knows, volatile, uncertain, CA, adaptive. So please just look it up on Google, the VUCA world. In order to prepare for ourselves as educators in a VUCA world, we need to build the right culture. Let's not stay on the symptomatic reliefs and build strategy. Stay on the solution, which is finding that, if I may, the, you know, the dose, the jab for COVID, such that it doesn't keep reoccurring as third wave and fourth wave. Is there a way we can find that solution? The solution lies in culture building. That is what I would have liked to say. And I'll be happy to stay on for the question answer after the next speaker. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.